Coming up next, Eugene Rashad will be interviewing Donnie L. Betts, the director of a film called Music Is My Life, Politics Is My Mistress, about the life of poet, singer, activist Oscar Brown Jr., playing tonight at the Witzel Auditorium.
What a dare, and why that on a dare? And oh, daddy, oh, hey, daddy, hey, look it over there. Hey, what they doing there, and why they going there? And daddy, can I have that big elephant over there? Hey, who that in my chair, and what she doing there? And oh, daddy, oh, hey, daddy, can I go over there? Hey, daddy, what's a square, and where do we get there? And daddy, can I have that big elephant over there? My quizzical kid, man, he doesn't want anything hidden, forever demanding to know who, what, and why, and where. Inquisitive times, and sometimes the questions get wild. But daddy, can I have that big elephant over there? Don't wanna comb my hair, and wear my teddy bear. And oh, daddy, oh, hey, look at the cowboy coming there. Hey, can I have a pair of boots like that to wear? And daddy, can I have that big elephant over there?
Oscar Brown Jr. As you know, if you're a music lover in this town, by the way, hello folks, my name is Daniel Flessis, host of The Outside World. But music lovers in this town get pretty excited every January for, this is the 23rd year of the Northwest Film Center's Real Music series. This is the place where we first saw Charlie Parker on film, Clifford Brown, great jazz, folk, and many other types of music are portrayed in this series, which shows most of their films at the Guild Theater, and some of them, if we're lucky, in the Witzel Auditorium, because they have such a nice state-of-the-art sound system in there. Such is our luck tonight, here in town and here in the studio with us, with my compatriot Eugene Rashad, is filmmaker Donnie Betts from Chicago, St. Louis?
No, Denver, Colorado.
Oh, Denver. All right.
Yeah.
Living in Denver now and doing radio at KGNU.
I am.
His film tonight is on the life and work of Oscar Brown Jr. It is called Music Is My Life, Politics My Mistress. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, it's good to be here. I've been hearing a lot about this great station, so it's good actually to sit down with you guys and have a little chit-chat.
It is, I described it as a loaded film when I was talking to Eugene. This film is loaded with history.
Mm.
And I think for anybody that doesn't know who Oscar Brown Jr. is, they would do well to go to the Witzel Auditorium tonight. That's in the Art Museum at 7 o'clock and see this film. It must have been a very exciting project for you. Now, you've made a number of films.
I have. Films. This is my first feature. The rest have been shorts, although they've extremely strong around the country. I did a film called Deerfield, The Road Less Traveled. It's about an all-black community in Colorado. after Reconstruction, there were a lot of black towns created around railroads and things like that. You know, the landless people needed land. So they settled properties and cities and towns. And Deerfield is one of those. And it's screened all over the world, in Africa, Europe, and America, and screened on PBS. And then also did a film most recently that won a regional Emmy for called My Voice, which is about the hip-hop culture. But this is my first feature. It's my most exciting film to me, even though I've won awards with other films, that kind of thing. But it's about an individual that I personally consider a mentor and someone I saw as a shining light in the cultural community of the United States and also of the world. So it was an honor to get a chance to work with him one-on-one and so closely for the last 5.5 years. Unfortunately, we did lose him last year, May 29th in 2005. But before that, he had an opportunity to see the film at the L.A. Pan-African Film Festival. And he was blown away. You know, he said, "You captured me," which is very, very flattering to me. And also at that screening was some giants of the industry, too. Melvin Van Peebles, Amir Baraka. Amir Baraka gave it a standing ovation.
That's my idol.
Well, Amir is in the film.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Amir is in the film. So
I'm excited as you are. Daniel, me too.
And Abby Lincoln is also in the film.
Yeah, and Abby Lincoln. So, you know, Nichelle Nichols, Studs Terkel. Those are the folks, you know. So, you know, with a giant, you have to have other giants. So those are the people who are part of the film. So if people even know anything about those names, anything about jazz with Abby Lincoln, anything about social commentary with Studs Terkel, and anybody who knows anything about poetry, and particularly political poetry, that would be Amir Baraka with Somebody Blew Up America, who set off a firestorm after 9/11 with that poem. But he was a contemporary of Oscar and a big fan of Oscar, you know, being a little bit younger than Oscar. So he was one of the first people to sign on and say, yeah, you know, I'd be glad to speak about Oscar Brown Jr. and his work.
Let me ask you a question, and I want your short answer.
Okay. I'm used to that.
Why is this piece of celluloid, your movie, your film, a significant quilt square to the American fabric of artistic expression?
Because it's time that black Americans reach out to an audience to make a profound statement. And Oscar Brown Jr. can make profound statements about our life here in America.
What would be that profound statement? Give us one or a couple.
One he talks about is how do we identify ourselves? Why do we call ourselves African Americans? Who was the first African American? And why and how did he come about that term? You had to come see the film to see the answer. But that's one of those questions that he raises. He also raises a question that he says, we need a revolution of the human heart. Why are we so mean to each other? Why do we keep fighting here in America? Why do we keep fighting in Israel and Palestine? Why do we keep fighting in Africa? You know, why can't we, you know, to use a simple statement, get along?
Dan, I just want to do something real quick, and this is from a book by Dr. Jordi Rue Leary called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome.
Mm.
In the book, she talks about her travels to some of the countries in Africa.
Yes.
And she noticed how the young black male teens greeted each other, Daniel, and it translated, you know, many tongues in Africa, Swahili and others, and it translated to say, I see you, my brother.
Yes.
I see you, my sister. And she noticed that whenever she saw young black males exchange greeting, that the translation was, I see you, my brother. I see you, my sister. Now, when we juxtapose and come to the shores of North America, how young black males greet each other. What you looking at?
Right.
What you looking at?
Yeah.
I see you, my brother.
Mm-hmm.
What you looking at? What happened?
Yeah. Well, that's been a mine, since I'm on radio, I won't say it, been a mine contamination that has happened. I always said, and Oscar and I used to have these great conversations, you know, off camera, sitting around the house, just kind of kicking it. He would say, and I would say, you know, we all really need to be in therapy because we've been brainwashed, hoodwinked, and conditioned to think that we are less than. Not only less than, you know, the mainstream, we're less than anything, subhuman, you know. So why is it okay? Finally, I see that the Webster Dictionary will identify nigga as being a derogatory term, you know, for anybody. But Oscar said the use of that word, why is the use of that word, has been so prolific, and especially in the rap culture, I won't say hip hop, rap culture. They say because it becomes not effective if you use it over and over. Well, Richard Pryor went to Africa. He said, I didn't see any niggas. Now, Richard Pryor, one of the stronger uses of the word, can say that. Then why can we still identify with it? So it's those kind of words that instead of saying, you know, I see you, my brother, you know, they say, what's up, my nigga?
Yeah.
Okay,
so
it's not a term of endearment.
Would you agree with the statement that then we have an entrenchment of young African-American males entrenched in our pathology?
Yes. Yes. And I think there's a new movement among young African-Americans, Black Americans, or however we choose to identify ourselves, that want to move beyond and move forward. And I'm hoping that that will catch on, as versus the bling-bling and all-about-me culture that hopefully we're coming out of, you know, hopefully with the movement of young people. And I can't really call any names because I don't want to put that label on them, and then they disappoint me and everybody else, you know. But there are some people I think that are out there that not right now you might not know about that are in the battle for the long run to say this is where we need to be now, you know. You know, me, you, and the other people who kind of kept the battle going, it's time for us to take over and see what we can do. And so I hope that generation keeps that spark going. So me as a filmmaker, that's what I try to do too, keep things in front of their eyes and say, these are the people that have led this battle. Honor them, but now you take your task upon you, and you move that thing forward. You know?
I think this is what a revolution looks like. Revolution is slow.
Yes.
And I'm, as you, I think we're about the same age, getting to the point where I can see that that social change does happen, and it's so painfully slow.
Yes.
And we try
Yes.
and make it happen faster, and it can be a frustrating process. But now I go into grade school, I see Malcolm X,
Yes.
I see Cesar Chavez,
Yes.
I see things I didn't see, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Absolutely.
And then I think, oh, we did that work. And we're still doing it.
Absolutely.
We're speaking with Donnie Betts, folks. He's here in town with his film, Music Is My Life, Politics My Mistress, a film about the life and work of Oscar Brown Jr. It's playing tonight at the Film Center at the Witzel Auditorium at 7 o'clock. And, you know, even for people that do know Oscar Brown and fans of Oscar Brown, you're going to learn something from this film. There were so many things that I did not know about. I didn't know about the Negro News, for instance, at WJJD,
right,
when he started doing that, and that he did that for a number of years.
Right.
I didn't know that Paul Robeson campaigned for him.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, people didn't know he ran for political office.
That's right.
You know, so people know Oscar through his music,
mm-hmm,
and that's why you have the title, Music Is My Life. But the second part of the title is Politics My Mistress, because that's what he believed in, and he believed in social change. I mean, he worked with gangs, you know, well before it became fashionable to work with youth gangs, you know. He walked into, in Chicago, there was a notorious street gang named the Blackstone Rangers, a massive, massive organization of young men. He said, well, Muhammad Ali has been over there to talk to you guys, so I thought I could bust in there and talk to you too. He said, well, I wasn't a boxer, you know, and they wouldn't listen to no poets, you know. He said he went into a room, excuse me, they were based out of a Presbyterian church, which is a whole nother story too. Reverend Fry was given all this money from the war on property, which is a whole nother film I'm going to make on the Blackstone Rangers. But he walked into his meeting. He said, there were 2,000, maybe 3,000 young men in that meeting. He said he had a shot ring out, and everything was quiet. You know, he said, yes, they were a bunch of young men, but they were disciplined. You know, he said, that's why they ruled the south side of Chicago at that time. He said, these are the people I need to deal with. You know, if they are terrorizing the neighborhood, we got to see what we can do. Put them in another enterprise, not tearing up the neighborhood, building the neighborhood. So those are the kind of things he tried to do as well as his music. You know, he dropped out of the music industry for 20 years on purpose so he could do just that and not be a slave to the industry, as they told him to try to be, you know, something that he didn't want to be, you know, to be a croon singer, as he said, to be a Sammy Davis or whatever. No knock on Sammy, but he said that's not my style. You know, that's not me.
So. Can you talk a little bit about Destination Freedom?
Sure.
What was that and its legacy?
Well, Destination Freedom is one of the reasons that Oscar and I got together. And Destination Freedom was the first series written by blacks and starring blacks in radio. As you know, radio was the most segregated industry that's ever been in the United States when it comes to media arts. So in 1948 in Chicago on WMAQ, that was a series started and written by Richard Durham, who also was the editor for Muhammad Speaks for 25 years. So yes, you know this, yes. So Richard Durham came out of the Writers Project from WPA, worked with Steps Turgle, and he had written Here Comes Tomorrow, which was one of the first soap operas. And he was just a tremendous writer and worked with the labor movement with Oscar Brown Jr. That's how they met. And so Oscar, coming out of the Negro News Front, which you mentioned, was the first public radio program that was geared to news of the Negro people at that time. It was Oscar Brown Jr. and Vernon Garrett, who's the founder of the National Association of Black Journalists. So they wanted to do something else. They wanted to do a dramatic series that talked about heroes and sheroes of that era and before. So he wrote plays about Langston Hughes, Ida B. Wells, Duke Ellington, Satchel Paige, Crispus Attucks, you know, all these kind of people. He did a series called The Segregation Series. He wrote plays about Toussaint Louverture. Yes. The next show I'm going to do is about Dr. Ralph Bunche. We figured it's a great time to talk about the Middle East when we have all this, when they have the voting with Hamas and Fatah now. So why not talk about the Middle East in the modern day and see what's happening, you know. So that was a groundbreaking series in that instance. And so I started producing this series again in 1998 on a station in Denver called KUVO, which is a jazz station, 89.3 FM, KUVO. And just because of different political things, we had a little bit of falling out. So I went to KGNU, which is a station like KBOO, who will say, do what you want to do, you know. And we're about that.
Marty Durlin told you that.
That's right. Right? We'll do what you want to do. I don't want any money. We just want to air the show. And so I wanted to keep that series alive, to keep it in front of people, to show young people and people of that era that that was something being done before the, quote, civil rights movement. That was a movement in the U.S. to talk about issues. And we need to bring those issues back on the table again. I mean, W. Du Bois said it, you know, the pressing issue of America is a race issue. And now people still don't want to discuss it, you know. You have to talk about something. And discuss it and debate it before we can be in a movement on it.
You said something at the top that I agree with you 1,000%, and I'm sure Daniel will too. Yes, W.B. Du Bois said that race would be the number one problem in the 20th century. We see it spilling over to the 21st century. Mm-hmm. But I think in order for us to get beyond the race issue, Daniel, is we have to look at the problems that African Americans suffer from in postmodern times as a mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
I will, because, you know, I work with several psychologists and sociologists in Denver to deal with this kind of issue. There's been a big roundtable discussions in the last month or so surrounding the University of Colorado. They've had very profound racial incidents in the last 3 or 4 years where students were beaten and physically assaulted, called names, that kind of stuff. It's on a campus of 20,000 students. 401 are black, and maybe 700, 800 are Latino. So as Oscar would say, a hostile environment. And it shouldn't have to be,
right. But
it is a hostile environment. So if we don't discuss these issues of race and identity, we don't know where it's even coming from. How does someone who's 18, 19 years old learn about racism? They weren't born that way. They have to learn it from someone that's around them, that they're close to, that identifies with that and believes in that. So those are the people we have to go after so they can let the next generation know that, hey, this is not cool, this is not right. You know, we all put here for a purpose, and one of your purposes is not to oppress the other one. You know, it's about uplifting, you know, not repressing.
My colleague to your left and my right, Daniel, he's got a daughter that's probably the hippest little white girl you'll ever meet in your life. Maya is just like, and I haven't seen her or spoken to her or heard any sounds come out of her in quite some time, Daniel. So you're going to have her to give me a ring or something, because I know she's hit all
of here tonight, actually.
Impregnating her with all this consciousness that you've been collecting over the lifespan of your life, and I know that she's a better person for it. So kudos to you.
Little monk freak. Too bad she's not hearing this because she's in school.
See, that's what it takes. It takes someone like you. It takes the parent, you know, or whoever the adult figure is in their life to say, you know, this is the way it's going to be, you know. Yeah, you can make your own decision up, but this is the groundwork. This is the foundation they're going to give you. As people tell, you know, when you're growing up for a religion, you know, okay, a child can make their decision later on when they get old enough, but at least take them to church or whatever your religion is and give them some kind of foundation, mm-hmm. you know. So let's give them a positive foundation. You know, there's enough negative foundations out there already.
Everything begins at home. Everything
begins at charity. Randall Robinson's latest book is called Quitting America. Mm-hmm. He talks about moving to St. Kitts. His wife is from St. Kitts. Mm-hmm. And so that was the out for him to go and relocate in St. Kitts. And he talks about why he left America from a black male perspective. Mm-hmm. My question to you is... would you agree with the statement that viewing film is an American value?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an American music from the film, plus spoken word that nobody has ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, we'll keep it on the minds of our listeners here.
Yes. There also is a book that's available now called What It Is. It's not by me.
By Sullivan. What's his name? Camus? I can't pronounce his name.
Yeah.
Salamu.
No.
Not him.
It's thinking about somebody else. Yeah. But this brother is Arthur Amaker. Okay. He's the publisher of this book. It was the first book, printed material of Oscar Brown Jr., amazingly enough. Mm-hmm. Although he wrote 1,000 songs, he wrote over 500 poems. I don't know how many spoken word pieces, articles, masses of stuff that you'll find at Howard University.
So you have the book with you tonight?
I have the book with me tonight. I have a few copies with me. It will be available soon on my website as well. But I also will have a small pocketbook that's going to be with the DVD. So the DVD is going to be a real package and pack full of stuff. Because I have things that are not in the book that he did only for me. He just before his death, he wrote something called The Outpouring. It was 110 sonnets that he wrote in 3 weeks. This is the kind of writer. He wrote every single day. I mean, wherever we were filming, wherever I was going, he had to have a laptop or something with him because he wrote all the time. So, yeah. We should give people some more of the music, too.
Well, you know, before we go, though, Destination Freedom,
yes.
I wanted to kind of catch up to the present.
Sure. Yeah.
Because you are doing something now.
Yeah. And people can listen in on February 20th here in Portland. It will be at 7 p.m. to KGNU.org. KGNU.org. I would say it'd be a sister in arms to KBOO. But they can listen to Destination Freedom. And that show is called The Autobiography of Dr. Ralph Bunche. And we have, after the show, we always have a guest artist. And that guest artist will be Renee Marie, who's a tremendous jazz artist with the trio. And we also will have discussions after the show as we talk about Palestine and Israel. Because, you know, Dr. Ralph Bunche was the first black to win a Nobel Peace Prize. And he did the first peace mediation between the then new state of Israel and the rest of the Arab world. And in this case, it was Egypt in 1947-48. He won the Nobel Peace Prize in 1950.
The film is Music is My Life, Politics My Mistress, The Life and Work of Oscar Brown Jr., playing tonight at 7 o'clock at the Witzel Auditorium, an award-winning film.
It is award-winning. We won several film festival awards, special cultural award at the Sidewalk Moving Pictures in Birmingham. We won Best Picture in Denver, Best Picture in St. Louis, Best Picture in Chicago.
Yes.
And, yeah.
So this is Donnie Betts, folks, and he will be presenting the film tonight. There'll be question and answer afterwards.
That's
yes?
right. Mm-hmm.
Talk to Donnie Betts. Meet Donnie Betts. And
buy a T-shirt, or buy a book, or
he's
buy
wearing
something.
One. So we recorded this today in the KBOO sauna. I hope you don't mind. We're kind of short on studio space, so this is the sauna.
It's fabulous, you know. It's fabulous. You know, actually, when I walked in, the sun was shining, so all was good.
Well, welcome to Portland. Thanks, Donnie Betts. Eugene Rashad, host of Jazz Rap on Saturday afternoons here on KBOO. And my name's Daniel Flesses. Stay tuned for the rest of the Radio Zine. And remember, it's not too late to call for a filibuster. If you've been thinking, oh, I should have called, it is not too late. The time is right now. Call your senators right now and a filibuster to tell them to filibuster and support this idea to filibuster against a right-wing Supreme Court justice. Thanks. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
job I hold down, I'm put sorely to the test. So when it comes quitting time, I surely do need.